Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House State Affairs Committee to order. Today's Thursday, February 8th, 2024, and let the record reflect that it is 3:05. Today we have present Representative Wright, Representative Carpenter, Representative Allard, Representative Carrick, Representative Story, and myself, Chair Shaw. We have a quorum to conduct business. I'd please like to remind the committee members and those in the audience to turn off or silence your cell phones. And staff today assisting us is Annie Goodenough with House Records and Talia Ames with the LIO, along with my committee aide, Buddy Wynn. We have four items on today's agenda, and we'll continue our discussion of House Bill 259, which we took up the other day, and House Bill 265, both sponsored by the Honorable Representative Sarah Vance. We'll bring Senate Bill 46 back at a later time for the committee for additional action, and we'll hear an introduction of House Bill 286 by Representative Cologne at a later time. Any members like to make any comments before we get started? Okay, seeing none. I'd like to welcome Representative Vance and her staff to the presenter's table. If you'd please come forward, put yourself on the record, and present your testimony. Quick overview of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Representative Sarah Vance of House District 6, representing the Lower Kenai Peninsula. And this is my staffer, my policy advisor.
Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's staff.
Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome Representative Johnson. Please.
Just as a simple overview, this House Bill 259 creates the Council on Human and Sex Trafficking in statute so that their important work can continue without interruption. I can elaborate further if you would like.
I'm used to Sarah Vance, so thank you. Are there any questions from committee members before I open for public testimony? Okay, seeing no questions, I'm going to open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? Looks like I have one individual. Yeah, please come forward, put your name on the record, and provide your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Brenda Stanfield with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you. We're very appreciative that we're looking for ways to make sure that the council on human and sex trafficking continues. This is something I was able to spend a year on, and my name is on that strategic plan, and I very much want to see us continue a way forward. One of the things that we are continuing to work with the bill sponsor to think about with the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, having our 24 regional programs and the intensity of our domestic violence and sexual assault work is making sure that we're adequately staffing in a way that none of these issues get lost. They're tremendously important, and with some of the openings, the change over the executive director in the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault staff, we just want to make sure that we have planned this in a way that all of the issues can receive adequate attention. So we'll continue to work on that and continue to have communication on this bill, and we're excited about seeing this council become something that we're really paying attention to. This is one of those times where I'm excited that I think we caught something early enough that with prevention, it doesn't have to become an epidemic. And this group did a great job in identifying what we need to do in order to continue moving forward to make sure the issue of human and sex trafficking is addressed. So thank you.
Thank you for that testimony. I will say that you have a very passionate representative carrying this bill, so
we appreciate that.
Any questions to none? We have two individuals online that would like to testify. Josh Loris from the Covenant House, if you're online, would you please provide us your name and your testimony?
Yes, this is Josh Lowers, Director of Statewide Initiatives for Covenant House Alaska.
Go ahead and provide your testimony, please.
Okay. Well, so yeah, I'm calling in favor of having the task force put into statute. I think I've worked at Covenant House for almost 15 years, and a number of those years I've been working on anti-trafficking work and have been on a lot of different task forces and different groups over the years that were not mandated by law. And as advocates and others have turned over, as momentum has changed in the city and in the state, it's been challenging to keep those groups together. And so there's little bursts of work that happen. But being able to see this group come together in a multidisciplinary way and be the momentum that has begun, we believe that putting this into statute would go a long way toward helping us get to our goals of preventing and ending, you know, human and sex trafficking in our state. And I would like to just shout out Representative Vance for the work that she's done on this and the array of ways that she's working on this issue.
Thank you, Mr. Lowers. We have Brittany Madros from member of the Human and Sex Trafficking Council. If you're online, would you please put your name on the record and provide your testimony?
Good afternoon. My name is Brittany Madras. I am the Tribal Government and Justice Division Director for Tanana Chiefs Conference and a current serving member of the Human Trafficking Council. I wanted to share our Tanana Chiefs Conference's support for House Bill 259, including making sure it is placed into statute. The council ourselves also had voted to codify the Human Sex Trafficking Council and support the one director, two board model, and wanting to make sure that this work also does continue. On behalf of Tanana Chiefs Conference, having an opportunity to be a part of the statewide implementation of addressing human trafficking and ensuring that we're not only worrying about Fairbanks and Anchorage, but also our rural communities and collaboration with tribes. This has been a extremely exciting work for the last year, and we are hopeful to see this bill go through. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Madras. We have Sabrina Stratford online. If you'd like to put your name on the record and provide your testimony, please.
Hi, Sabrina Stratford. I'm a human trafficking abolitionist, and I spent 14 months working at the Downtown Hope Center. Just two quick true stories of actual sex trafficking. One of the young ladies that I had to drive to the hospital for her rape kit, she had simply gotten in the truck with a trafficker. She did not do drugs, but they gave her a beer. It was drugged. The highway patrol found her 3 days later down in Kenai, naked in bushes, and I had to take her to the hospital, and she had just been brutalized. The other was another indigenous young lady, and she got in the truck with one of the traffickers, and we knew that she was missing, and she was found murdered in a snowbank down the street from the Hope Center. So my summary is just that I understand that sex trafficking is what happens between missing and murdered, and I just support this bill 100%.
Thank you, Ms. Stratford. Tamara Jaru, Fairbanks, if you'd like to put your name on the record and provide your testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Tamara Truett Jaru, and I am the Executive Director for the Alaska Native Women's Resource Center. We are in support of this bill, but I also concur with Brittany Madras that it's important that we don't forget our rural communities and also the vulnerabilities that many of our folks face when they come into these larger cities and just the amount of trafficking, but also just preying on our citizens. And so I am in support of this codification and also in support of making this a permanent in statute so that we can actually continue the work because we have a lot of work to do. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Drew. Adam Legg from Love, Alaska in Anchorage, you'd like to put your name on the record and provide your testimony, please.
Yes, hello. My name is Adam Legg. I'm the executive director of Love, Alaska, a nonprofit organization based out of Anchorage.
One of our initiatives, Priceless, works exclusively with survivors of human sex trafficking here in our state. And I'm just calling in to support this bill. We think it's really important that our state continues a focus on the issue of human and sex trafficking, both in urban areas and in rural areas around our state. This is the kind of thing that we need continued support, continued focus on, and we believe this helps do exactly that.
Thank you, Mr. Legg. And we also have online Ryan Barlow, the Deputy Commissioner of Public Safety, for questions, and Captain Ramon Dunford, Director at the Captain at the Alaska State Troopers in Anchorage as well, for questions. With that, I'd like to close public testimony. We have three amendments for consideration today, one for myself and two from Representative Carrick. I'm the sponsor of Amendment Number 1 by request. I'm going to make a motion to move the amendment, and then I will ask Vice Chair Wright to object if he would, please.
Objection.
I move Amendment 1.
Objection.
Sorry, I didn't get there, did I?
Yeah, I thought you were all into it.
As I mentioned, this is a friendly amendment brought to my office by the bill sponsor. I'd like to ask Representative Vance's staff, Mr. Ballinger, to please come forward, put your name on the record, and explain the amendment and why it's needed, please.
Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's staff. And the amendment is really, really pretty straightforward. It was actually offered from the Department of Public Safety. And it's in response to really two things that addresses. The first thing is, okay, what if the councils can't directly get along on hiring a specific director? How do you manage that? And so that's the first part of the bill. And the second part of the bill, or the amendment, is a delayed date of when it becomes effective. And that's just to allow the current Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault to be able to work with their new director and get things up and going before the new board comes on. And we're not necessarily losing any ground on the trafficking, because the Governor's Council will continue through that time. So the delayed start date is in 2025 on March 1st. But I'll go over line by line kind of explaining how the amendment does that. But if you look, well, the first couple of things, if you're looking at the amendment, the first couple of things, you know, the "and" is just cleanup. The other is changing the title to include the effective date. And then the next, where it says coordination with, they're deleting that in order to put a little more detail in the fact that each agency is going to be submitting two members. In this case, what we're talking about is the members of the Council on Domestic Violence will have two members that's going to work with the Council on Human and Sex Trafficking. If you go on a little further with the next amendment, is to actually incorporate this new language. And so the jointly and the recruit is kind of the same thing. So instead of working jointly, they're recruiting to hire somebody together. But if you go down to the to Section 2, that language is put in order to facilitate that coordination. So the Commissioner of Public Safety or the Commissioner's designee shall chair a joint hiring committee under A1, which language ahead, above, only one representative from each department. So basically two representatives coming from the same departments that's on this committee, which is possible to happen because you could have one from the Domestic Violence Council and one from the Trafficking Council. And if that happens, they're going to work with the various councils to try to get that person replaced, so you don't end up with two people from the same agency. And then this is just repeated. So that amendment does it, one for the Council on the Domestic Violence, and then the other one, it does it for the Council on Human Trafficking. And so that's basically what the amendment is. And then if you look at the very end, that's where we discuss the delayed start date. It adds a new section of the bill that says the Act takes effect March 1st, 2025. And I'm happy to answer any questions on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Ballinger. Representative Vance, anything you'd like to add to that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The reason that there is a delayed start date of March 2025 is after discussing having a discussion with the new CDPSA director. The request was made for January of next year. And because I have experience of working, of being an ex officio member on the council, I remember that it's usually the beginning of the year that the council is developing the finalization of the report that they bring to the legislature. And so that's why I decided that perhaps March would be more appropriate, is to be able to have time to be able to get that report done before they transition to the new director. And we're having further conversations to make sure that the transition is going to be smooth. But again, as Mr. Ballinger said, that the current governor's council has expressed that they are fully prepared to give whatever support that they need to the new director and staff.
Thank you for the follow-up. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Carrick.
Thank you, through the chair. Is the governor's council able to meet in the meantime between this legislation potentially passing and March of 2025?
Through the chair, Representative Carrick, yes, they will continue as usual, and I believe that their next scheduled meeting is March, so they're going to continue their work, and I imagine that there will not be significant changes in the council, because a lot of the members are likely going to remain the same, because the bill was modeled after the current council, so it's the positive addition is that they would be able to hire new staff to be able to do a lot of the administrative work, and then obviously a new shared director.
Thank you. Any additional questions from committee members? Thank you. No further objections. I remove my objection. Representative Wright?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remove my objection.
So we both did.
It was mine.
Thank you. Thank you. A little humor goes a long way in this work.
Trying to work.
Thank you. Representative Carrick, would you like to move your amendment? Brief at ease. Seeing none, Amendment 1 has been adopted. Thank you. Representative Carrick, would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment number 2.
Object.
Purpose of discussions. Yeah, thank you. Amendment number 2 simply responds to the conversation that my office has been able to have with, some current stakeholders and responding to, I think, the comments from the director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault to see a separate executive director for this new council and for the current council, just in an attempt to alleviate the potential overburden on either council and make sure that we're adequately able to staff and accomplish the goals of both councils. I think this is really important when we think about how we move forward with this work and how to best support victims and best support this issue going forward. And while I do appreciate the sponsors, wanting to work with both jointly, I also think that when the director currently says that it's a lot to take on, I want to be responsive to that. And I think this is a really straightforward way to make sure that we're adequately addressing both of these definitely interrelated but both very important issues and making sure there's the resources to do that. So that is the impetus behind offering this amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from the bill sponsor on the amendment.
All right, thank you.
What are your thoughts?
Representative Amps?
Through the chair to Vice Chair Wright, thank you for that. I appreciate where this is coming from. This is, a couple of you have expressed this to me. I would just like to emphasize that this was not my decision. This was collaboration of the current governor's council, who came up with this shared director idea in an effort to make sure that we're not administratively top heavy and put our resources to the boots on the ground, to the victims who need the services, and really looking at the overall fiscal impact. So I don't want to speak for the council. Deputy Commissioner Brian Barlow is available online who could speak to that.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner Barlow, are you online? Would you like to comment on that? From Representative Vance, did you hear her comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner Brian Barlow, for the record. I did hear the comments, and today I'll be speaking as the chair of the Governor's Council on Human and Sex Trafficking, and to the comment from Representative Vance, who I'll jump on the coattails of everyone else and thank her for her just amazing support for this effort here. I know there's a lot of work that's gone into it. I too will reiterate that it has been the voice of the council, the opinion of the council, that the one director, two board model can work. We have other examples of that in the state. We very much know that the work of the council on domestic violence and sexual assault is extremely important to victims in Alaska. In no way do we want to dilute that work or the effectiveness of that council. Thus, we talk about a delayed start. We talk about assistance in the process to select a director. We talk about the need for some staffing for the Council on Human and Sex Trafficking in order to make this a realistic system that can work, but also trying to remain as fiscally responsible as possible in not having two directors. We feel strongly that this can work. If there's concern within the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, we understand that, but we hope that we're also sending a message that we feel strongly about their work, that it needs to continue and supporting Alaskan victims, and that we're realistic about start dates. We're realistic about administrative support that is needed to make both councils work under that one director system. And I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner Barlow. Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. And to the Deputy Commissioner, if I might ask a question.
Please.
Thank you for your work on this. Did you ever discuss having two program coordinators, as part of this council, as part of this human sex trafficking? I kind of feel like I see it as a department in a way, with one of those positions taking on more of a role of helping coordinate the council. And why I ask that is to oversee the executive director, to oversee a 14-member council, a 17-member council, seems like a lot. I know it takes executive directors a long time to just work with one board and prepare for them. And we know we have the highest domestic violence sexual assault in the nation. And, you know, very important that we don't lose momentum on either side of the issue. So I'm wondering if you discussed any kind of different staffing levels.
Through the chair, ma'am, yes, and I want to make sure that I'm understanding you correctly. We have discussed additional staffing. We do not want to dilute the effectiveness of the current administrative staffing of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, thus the ask, if you will, for an administrative assistant and a program coordinator as well for the Governor's Council on Human and Sex Trafficking. To ensure that there's adequate administrative and support staff there to organize the work of both councils and not dilute it and not create a scenario where the amount of work is overwhelming for the director. We want to keep it realistic, but the effectiveness of both councils remains.
Follow up. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I certainly think this council, we really need it and we want it to work well. And so I'm concerned that it is understaffed and that the current one director of two major needs is not enough. And I recognize that the council, after this goes forward, can come back and say, hey, we need another position. It's just I would really like to see it be as effective as possible. And we have done some other initiatives in our state. And if we don't have adequate funding, sometimes we're not successful. And so I would like to see another staff person there. It just seems it would be very effective.
Thank you. Any additional comments from committee members? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can see the value of the amendment in one regard. While all the overwhelming testimony has been that we've got an issue with sex trafficking in the state and around the nation, it does remain a question in my mind is exactly how much of it is going on in the state and how big of a problem it is. I know that what we do know is from people who have come forward. What we don't know is from the people who haven't come forward. So I think that it is possible in the future that we find out, hey, this is a much bigger problem than we have. It might also be that we find out that, as the previous testimony had stated, we kind of nipped this in the bud and we don't see a much larger problem. And so if you've got both the councils that have got administrative staff and one executive director, the executive director is not actually managing a large number of people. They're just managing a couple of the administrative staff for both of the committees, or I'm sorry, the councils. So I think that the amendment, the question should probably be revisited next year. And we identify what our workload is after we've got it created and make an assessment as to whether we need new leadership at that point. And that's what I think.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure who can answer this, but you know, we have a physical note for a program coordinator and an administrative assistant. If this were to pass, would we need another program coordinator, but would we also need another administrative assistant, and therefore doubling the amount of this physical note? I'm kind of, how is it structured? And I tend to lean towards not spending if we don't have to, but if we have to, we should. So I'd be curious to know, is it a straight algebraic equation? More people, twice the money, twice the people. And I don't know who can answer that. But it seems like we may be, at this point, funding something we don't necessarily need and maybe funding it twice. So is anyone can answer the cost?
Anyone can help us with that complicated question?
Through the chair, Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office. I think with this amendment, it actually adds a new executive director. And so the cost wouldn't be with the new coordinator and administrative assistant. The cost would be a new executive director. The money may end up being the same, but that's a new position that this amendment would require.
Follow up?
And so one board's going to have an executive assistant and a coordinator and the other one's not, or a coordinator and the other one's not. So you'd think just one person is going to make a difference, that much of a difference. And these are questions I have. And I quite frankly don't think that coordinator position is going to have that big an effect without the support staff that goes along with it, which is provided for in the original bill.
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, the issue would, like, currently the Council of Domestic Violence, I think, has 10 employees and executive director. What the new council would come in is that they have two employees, the legislation that Representative Vance is carrying, that have two employees and then share that existing executive director. What Representative Carrick is doing with this amendment is essentially taking that shared position out and granting a new position. While we think that's a fabulous idea, if the funding were there, we have got this compromise where there's a shared position in order to pass the legislation. Representative Vance, you know, worked with the council. That was their idea to try to minimize the cost. And so while we think it'd be great if that were possible, we don't feel like that's – we feel like the current bill, the way Representative Vance offered it, is appropriate.
Thank you. And I tend to agree with that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Carrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can offer some wrap-up comment if that would be valuable.
Please.
You know, I think the impetus here is not necessarily to grow the budget, but I hear that the main pushback against the potential of adding a second executive director is a fiscal concern. I would just note to the comments of the sponsor about the severity of this problem in Alaska, and that in order to gather some of the data that Representative Carpenter was talking about, it's really important to not overburden the current duties of the CDVSA and also make sure we're able to get and capture that data. You know, I used to oversee a board, and in my previous job, of 8 people and 2 staff, and there were days where I was totally overwhelmed by that. And I'm a person who can multitask pretty well, I like to think. What we're doing with this legislation is a completely valuable effort, and it's a noble effort on a very serious problem. And I'm really grateful to the sponsor for bringing it forward. But we are also going from one person overseeing a board of 14 people and 10 staff to another board of 17 more people and only 2 more staff. So the workload is absolutely going to increase really substantially. I think that adding a second person as a director level position would make a pretty big difference in the workload and ability of us to not dilute the functions of either of the current boards. And I really respect the governor's council and their desire to be fiscally responsible, but this legislation also does have a fiscal note. And I think in regard to how serious this problem is, I think there's absolutely a lot of merit to making sure we're appropriately tackling the issue, and this is just a small way to do that. So would ask for member support.
Any additional comments? Seeing none, I maintain my objection. I'd like to ask the House Records to call a roll.
Representative Carpenter?
No.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Allard?
No.
Representative Carrick?
Yes.
Representative Story?
Yes.
Representative Wright?
No.
Chair Shaw?
No.
Okay. 2 yeas, 5 nays.
With 5 nays and 2 yeas, amendment number 2 does not pass. I would like to continue with the amendment process. Representative Carrick, if you'd like to give your testimony on...
I'll move amendment number 3 first, objection. Mr. Chair. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this amendment, just really simply for everyone's consideration, I was looking at the current composition of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. They do have victim advocate positions, and I think there's so much merit in having those positions. And this new council does have a victim advocate position. It also later would codify in statute a faith-based position for the council. And I think there's so much value in the work that our faith leaders do in this arena, and there's so much value in the ways that they're able to adequately support victims and provide services. But I do have concerns about statutorily designating a faith-based person. I'm not sure exactly what the parameters of that would look like. And so this amendment simply switches the faith-based person, takes that language out, and puts in, instead of one victim advocate, 2 victim advocates. So maintains the composition of the council and the number of positions on that council, but simply removes a designated faith-based person. The other thing I just would like to point out is I think victim advocates come in all shapes and sizes from lots of different organizational perspectives. One of those is absolutely from faith communities. So I see an avenue with this legislation for there to absolutely be faith-based individuals providing services and to be making their voice heard on the council. So I would absolutely encourage those individuals to participate and apply to be with the council, but just don't necessarily want to see us have a statutorily designated individual for that background. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carrick. Are there any questions from committee members?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to hear from the bill sponsor.
Thank you. Representative Vance?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wright, I do not support this amendment for a couple of reasons. If you look at the history in the United States of the abolitionist movement against human slavery, it has been started and maintained by faith-based organizations, whether that was during this time of the Civil War, all the way to here in Alaska, the first and only victims advocate organization that deals directly with victims of human trafficking is a faith-based organization called Priceless Alaska. So by adopting this amendment, it would be saying that the first people to step up to the plate and offer services to those who were trafficked in Alaska as a faith-based organization was not specifically welcomed at the table in statute. So I think this is not the message that the legislature wants to send by changing this. That is my position by principle. But the second position is that the composition of membership was directed by the deliberation of the current Governor's Council on Human and Sex Trafficking, as proposed by the governor and all of the members who have been working on this issue since December of 2021. And I would prefer to adhere to the work and consideration that they've done on the membership included.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Any additional comments from committee members? Seeing none, do you maintain your objection?
I maintain my objection, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. With that, I'd like the House Records to call the roll on Amendment Number 3, please.
Representative Wright.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Allard.
No.
Representative Carrick.
Yes.
Representative Story.
No.
Chair Shaw.
No.
One yay.
On a vote of 6 nays and 1 yay, Amendment Number 3 fails. This concludes the amendment process. Are there any further questions or comments from committee members before I look to the will of the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing I've learned from listening to testimony is that every member of this organization is a victim's advocate. And to single out and to not include everyone, I think the amendment just failed. But I want to point out that everyone on this committee or this board is deeply committed to victims' advocacy. And so I think that's an important distinction. It seems like we've almost segregated that you are this board, that board, but everyone who serves on this new hybrid board is a highly devoted victims advocate, and I just on the record would like that to be known.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Any additional comments from committee members? Seeing none, Vice Chair Wright, can I have a motion, please?
Chair Shaw, I move House Bill 259, Work Order 33 LS 1075B, as amended from committee, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection, seeing and hearing none, House Bill 259 moves from the House State Affairs Committee to the next committee of referral. We'll take a brief at ease to complete the committee report. We're back on the record. We're going to move on to Senate Bill 46 at the moment. Don't leave the building, please, Representative Vance. Next item on the agenda today will be Senate Bill 46, designating March as Brain Injury Awareness Month, sponsored by Senator Tobin. On Thursday, February 1st, the committee was introduced to the bill. We heard from invited testimony, and we opened and closed public testimony. No amendments were received by my office by the amendment deadline. I'd like to invite Senator Sovitz's staff to the presenter's table. If you'd please put your name on the record and provide an overview of the bill, please.
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Mackenzie. I'm staff to Senator Lukey Gale Tobin. Senate Bill 46 would designate March as Brain Injury Awareness Month indefinitely instead of having to re-up it every year. And that's all the bill does.
I appreciate the overview. Any questions from committee members? Sorry for the length of time that we have to have gone through this process, but without any additional comments or questions before us, seeing and hearing none.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Johnson.
I'm kind of a stickler for this, but if I go to the fiscal notes, I don't even know what this is. Statement of zero fiscal impact. I mean, it's not the format. It's not. So I just want to go on record that this is not a fiscal note, even if it is a zero, if you look at it. And you look at the next page, and that's what a fiscal note is supposed to look like. So that's all I have to say.
Brief at ease, please. The record, Representative Johnson.
No, I just wanted to point out that it's somewhat irregular physical note, and I'll deal with that later, even though it's a zero.
Oh, she said, never mind. Jamie said, never mind.
Okay. Thank you. I think we're good to go. Vice Chair Wright, do you have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Chair Shaw, I move Senate Bill 46. Work order number 33LS0325B from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Thank you. With no additional objections or comments, Senate Bill 46 is moved from committee to the next committee of referral. We'll take a brief at ease to complete the committee report. We're back on the record. Thank you for allowing us a break to go through a very lengthy process in the earlier bill. On Thursday, February 1st, the committee heard an initial bill introduction on HB 265, sponsored by Representative Vance. I'm bringing the bill back before the committee to continue our discussion today. Representative Vance, would you and your staff please introduce yourself for the record and give an overview of the bill, please?
My name is Representative Sarah Vance of House District 6, representing the Lower Kenai Peninsula, and this is my policy advisor.
Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance staff.
In all simplicity, House Bill 265 changes the term child pornography to child sexual abuse material. This is significant because it changes the wording in law to reflect an illegal activity. The term pornography is an legal adult activity, but sexual abuse of children is not. And so by changing and updating these terms, it puts it in line with the actual criminal activity.
Thank you, Representative Vance. Mr. Ballinger, do you feel like there's any need to go to the lengthy sexual analysis for an overview?
Only if the committee feels the need to.
Does the committee have a feeling one way or the other? Pretty lengthy. All right. Thank you. We could just set that aside then and go from there. We have Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General in the Department of Law, and online we have Lieutenant Robert French for any questions that need to be answered. Are there any questions from the committee on these changes? Wow. Okay. Is there anyone in the room? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. Through the chair, I know that many states are adopting this now, and it is seen to be like just the way it is happening across the United States, making this change. So thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you, Representative Story. I'd like to open up the room for public testimony. Is there anyone online or in the room that would like to provide testimony on? Let's see here. We've got one in the room. Please come forward, put your name on the record, and provide your testimony.
Thank you. Once again, Brenda Stanfield with the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. We do thank the bill sponsor for bringing this forward. The language definitely portrays what it truly is when we have children whose pictures are being taken as child sexual abuse materials. And we strongly support, as the 24 regional programs across the state, the change in this language, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to it.
Thank you for that testimony. And online, we have Amber Nickerson with the Community United for Safety and Protection. If you'd like to put your name on the record and provide your testimony, please.
Sure. Hi, good afternoon. My name is Amber Nickerson, and I'm calling representing Community United for Safety and Protection. Really quickly, I do have to say we oppose HB 259. We signed up for text notifications and we did not receive any, so we weren't able to give that testimony today. But I'm happy to give testimony right now to endorse this crucial bill, HB 265. As it addresses the immunity section of the prostitution statute, we also want to propose an amendment to empower clients who we've said before are our first responders in detecting sex trafficking to report such incidents without facing prostitution charges. So I want to also state that currently there is the ability to report incidents with immunity. And this provision has proven invaluable, as right now a woman who has come forward about a man currently facing murder charges and is undergoing trial for a heinous multiple murders. So this shows the importance of extending similar protections to clients regarding reporting sex trafficking under HB 265. Thank you.
Ms. Dickerson, we appreciate that testimony. Could you provide an email to this committee regarding your testimony?
Sure. My email address is Amber Nickerson, spelled out lowercase, 1974, no spaces, @gmail.com.
Yes, Representative Carpenter has a question.
Ms. Nickerson, thanks for calling in. And I'm not sure what happened with the technology that you didn't get notified about it, testimony on 259, HB 259. But I just wanted you to know that if you email this committee, the State Affairs Committee, with your testimony, even though that bill has passed, that the testimony will still become part of the record. So you can still do that.
Thank you. I will definitely be doing that after I hang up. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. Thank you, Ms. Nickerson. We have Matthew, is it DuBois from Juneau? If you'd like to put your name on the record and provide testimony, please.
Yes, my name is Matthew DuBois. I'm a law enforcement officer in the state of Alaska, have been for over 16 years. More than half of my career, I've investigated internet crimes against children. I've been exposed to many photographs and videos of child sex abuse material are currently known by state law as child pornography. I don't believe that there is such a thing as child pornography. I believe language matters. Unclear language can lead to misunderstanding, confusion, harm, or even acceptance of the language. The continued use of term of child pornography is an example of how harmful words can be. Child sex abuse material is a result of children being groomed, coerced, and exploited by their abusers. By using the term child pornography, it applies as a subcategory of legal acceptable pornography rather than what it is, a child abuse and a crime. Referring to CSAM as pornography puts the focus on the material as opposed to the impact they have on children. By changing this language, it makes everyone face the impact on children and will recognize the abuse. And continue to use the term child pornography, it minimizes the harm experienced by children, and we know these impacts are long-lasting and devastating. From my training experience in these cases and speaking with victims, who have been abused this way grow up feelings of shame, guilt, and fear that abuse material will resurface in the future, which some say never give them any sense of closure of crimes committed against them. We know this material can remain online forever, and children continue to be re-victimized every time it is viewed, shared, or downloaded. Using the term child pornography hides the true impact of perpetrators' behavior, and perpetrators are not making or watching pornography. They are abusing children. The term child pornography diminishes the seriousness of the crime, which in some cases can lead to children not getting the support and protection they may need. Using more accurate terminology forces everyone to confront the reality of what is happening. If the language changed to child sex abuse material, everyone would start to recognize the material as abuse. Thank you.
Thank you for that testimony. We have Delana West from Homer. If you'd like to provide your name and testimony, please, for the record.
Yes, my name is Delana West. I am from District 6. And I just wanted to call in support of HB 265. I strongly encourage the committee to support this bill and others like it for the safety of our children. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for that testimony. Could I ask for Angela Gary, Office of Victim Rights in Wasilla, to put your name on the record and provide your testimony, please.
Your Honor, I'm testifying for the next bill.
Is that Bill 286?
Yes. Yeah. For the restitution bill, Your Honor.
Yes, okay, fine. Brenda Stanfill, Director of Alaska Network of Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. You'd like to come forward and provide your testimony? You already done that. My apologies. Okay, it looks like then we've gotten through everything. I'm going to take a brief at ease here just for a second. For House Bill 265. Vice Chair Wright. You have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 265, Work Order 33LS1128B from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection, so moved. We'll take an at ease for the next to sign the paperwork and for the next presenter to come in. The last item on today's agenda, which has been a pretty full agenda, we appreciate your time and energy. House Bill 286, Crime Victim Restitution, sponsored by Representative Colon. I would like to invite the representative and her staff to the presenter's table and put yourself on the record, and please give us an overview of your bill.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Julie Colomb. I represent District 11, South Anchorage Hillside, and I have my staff here.
Hello, Mr. Chair. My name is Jordan Wright, staff to Representative Colomb.
So HB 286 seeks to make a clarification in the current Alaska statute regarding victim restitution for crimes. Currently, the statute allows the court to order a defendant convicted of a crime to make restitution to the victim of that crime for injuries related to counseling, medical, and shelter services. However, the statute does not provide much clarity on what type of services would qualify, resulting in fewer prosecutors asking for particular types of restitution. HB 286 would clarify that lost income, child care, elder care, transportation, or any other expenses incurred during the victim's participation in legal action related to the case would be eligible for restitution. HB 286 will strengthen the ability of victims to receive compensation for costs related to their time spent in court and make it more difficult for convicted defendants to appeal restitution payment for the costs of their actions have inflicted on the victim. This is particularly relevant in cases involving domestic violence, as the continuation of court cases involving restitution can result in a perpetuation of the cycle of abuse. So just to give some background, my staff and I had visited the Office of Victims' Rights in the interim, and they had asked me if I would be willing to sponsor this bill because there's an issue with trying to get restitution for victims. And so basically, as the sponsor statement says, there's some wiggle room or some vagueness to the statute This bill simply clarifies exactly those restitution items that can be given to a victim. So we do have just a couple of slides just to explain the Office of Victims' Rights, and
Please turn it
over to Jordan.
Through the chair, Jordan Wright. So the Office of Victims' Rights was created in the nature of a Inspector General's office. It is within the legislative and not the executive branch. It provides advocacy in court on behalf of victims and investigates their complaints and has the ability to obtain information from various criminal justice organizations. The Office of Victims' Rights is funded from the forfeited PFD checks of those convicted of felonies, or there's a couple other ways that they can be forfeited. The bill, HB 286, would clarify that restitution can be granted for expenses that are the result of the crime, including lost wages, child care for attending court hearings, and other expenses. And the purpose of the new language is to strengthen the ability of prosecutors to ask for compensation for those various expenses.
Would you like to give an overview of your sectional analysis while you're already there?
Yes, through the chair, Jordan Wright. Section 1 of HB 286 amends AS 1255-045A, page 1, lines 10, 14 as follows. Restitution to a victim or other person injured by the offense includes compensation for the value of lost income, necessary child care, elder care, transportation, and other expenses incurred during the victim's or other person's participation in the investigation or prosecution of the offense or attendance at court proceedings related to the offense. Section 2, the uncodified law of the state of Alaska, is amended by adding a new section to read applicability. AS 1255-045A, as amended by Section 1 of this Act, applies to an order of restitution for an offense committed on or after the effective date of this Act.
Thank you. And I would also like to highlight, we have available to answer questions, Casey Schroeder from the Department of Law, Nancy Mead from the Alaska Court System, Catherine Hansen from the Office of Victim Rights, and we'll be hearing from Angela Geary from the Office of Victim Rights. And for invited testimony, if I could, I'd like to invite Ms. Geary to put herself on the record and provide her testimony regarding this bill.
Thank you, Chair. I would note that Ms. Hansen is there in person representing our office and has prepared a statement. So if the council can ask Ms. Hansen to speak first, and then I'm happy to answer questions after that. Thank you.
Yeah, please go ahead. Ms. Hansen, put yourself on the record, provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Hansen. I'm a senior staff attorney at the Office of Victims' Rights, and I've had the privilege to serve crime victims in Alaska in that capacity for the past 20 years. The changes that are proposed in this bill, HB 286, were requested by the Office of Victims' Rights in response to individual clients that we serve and two Court of Appeals decisions that came out in 2022 and 2023 that state it's an open question whether victims of crime can be awarded a criminal restitution judgment for the costs or lost wages to attend court proceedings. And I'd like to put those two cases on the record. They are unpublished opinions, but they were decided by the Court of Appeals. And in both cases, the victims requested restitution for lost wages to attend court proceedings was remanded back to the trial court. The first case is Keene Smith versus State. It's an unpublished decision, but it can be found on Westlaw at 2022-WL-322-6305. And the other citation is Seeley versus State, also an unpublished decision. The first case I mentioned, Keene Smith, was decided on August 10th, 2022. And the second case, Seeley versus State, was decided on April 5th, 2023. It's an unpublished decision. Its citation is 2023 WL 278-3265. I'll read just a few sentences. That's the crux of the issue from the Keene Smith case, the first case I cited. And it just says, the court has not previously been asked to rule on whether and under what circumstances a victim can receive restitution for time spent in court proceedings. This is therefore an open question under Alaska law. We note that many jurisdictions preclude such restitution awards, often on the grounds that plaintiffs in a civil action cannot recover for time spent in court proceedings absent express statutory authorization. Notably, federal law expressly allows restitution for certain crime victims, lost income and necessary child care, transportation, and other expenses incurred during participation in the investigation or prosecution of the offense or attendance at proceedings related to the offense. Other courts have permitted restitution under these circumstances even in the absence of such express statutory language, although some courts have limited the restitution to only those hearings where the victim's presence was, quote, reasonably necessary. So what these two decisions do is signal to all courts, all judges in the state of Alaska and prosecutors in the state of Alaska that they're not sure whether they should be asking or whether they can get an award for restitution for these types of financial losses that crime victims actually incur. The bill would remedy that. And the requested language is based on the actual federal law that's currently in existence for criminal cases in federal courts that make it clear that victims are entitled to those expenses for actual losses directly caused by the crime. And it would give the so what this would do would eliminate litigation on this open question, provide guidance for judges and prosecutors, alleviate the necessity of having additional restitution hearings where a victim has to physically appear at another court hearing, testify at another court hearing, see the defendant again, and wonder whether they will be given a piece of paper that says they are owed the money. So we want to streamline the process. It would make the judicial process more efficient in criminal cases, so it would be a cost savings. I want to make it clear to the committee that we're not asking for money. This isn't something that the state or taxpayers are funding. It's just simply providing a means for the court to order that the defendant owes the victim this money. We already have a constitutional guarantee that crime victims have a right to be at every court proceeding involving criminal offenses. So it's important that we make it a statute that clearly says that victims can get compensated for actual costs they incur to attend those court proceedings. Otherwise, people who can afford it will go, and people who can't afford it won't. And that's not the right decision. As between an offender and a victim, the cost should be borne by the offender. I want to give you a couple of examples of actual cases that the Office of Victims' Rights has currently on its docket where this is being litigated. One is the murder of David Grunwald. The surviving parent, Edie Grunwald, is our client, and she's attended all the court hearings for all the co-defendants in that murder case, and it's taken several years. And the defense is actively opposing compensation for lost wages for both the time she took off work to go to court proceedings and the time she was unable to work to take time to process the grief and the trauma of becoming a crime victim when her son David was murdered. Another example is crime victim Yanni Morley. I believe she submitted a letter to this committee. Her wife was murdered, and she has asked the court to award lost wages for her to attend court proceedings. There are multiple co-defendants, multiple hearings over multiple years, and it's important for her to be able to get a court order that will make her whole financially for the time spent going to these crimes.
I'm happy to answer questions. One other thing I wanted to say is I believe that lost wages have already in practice been awarded in cases that are considered by the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, but the Violent Crimes Compensation Board only awards money to crime victims who ask, and only in cases involving violent crime, and doesn't cover all types of crime. So this statute is also necessary to be implemented so that it would apply across the board to all crime victims.
Thank you for the testimony, Ms. Hansen. Representative Allard, you have a question.
Thank you, and through the chair. I know we can't do it for everybody, but is there a dollar value that there is possibly anything to be retroactive for those? I know what Mrs. Grunwald has gone through for quite, I almost think it's been a decade or long time. And so I'm wondering if there is any retroactive for any of these victims of violent crimes.
Through the chair, Representative Allard, restitution is a component of a criminal offender being sentenced, and the principles of double jeopardy, I believe, would prevent a court from going back and changing a sentence, which would include restitution. So I don't think we'd be able to do that.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I have a question regarding the bottom half of the bill here. That's lines 6 through 8, and I would like to get your opinion on this. The question that I have is the discretion that's given to the court in order to consider 1 and 2, which is, one is a public policy that favors requiring criminals to compensate for damages and injury, and we're removing the words including loss of income, but that phrase is being included in the words that are being inserted above to their victims, or financial burden placed on the victim and those who provide services to the victim and other persons injured by the offense as a result of the criminal conduct of the defendant. And the question I have is, in practice, is that helping or hindering that discretion, helping or hindering receiving restitution? And the reason that I'm asking is because we're adding things that are going to be allowable for restitution, but the statute is still giving some discretion to the court. So I'm wanting to understand if that's something that in practice is also part of the problem or part of the solution.
So can we get the Department of Law possibly to answer that question? Casey Schroeder or Nancy Mead from the courts?
Mr. Chair, I would pose the same question to them. I'm just looking from you're representing victims. From your experience, does this portion of the statute help or hinder your ability to get restitution for the people you represent? Or is it a non-factor?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, it could be. So I appreciate your question. In general, we have a constitutional provision that says victims have the right to restitution from the accused. So we have the constitutional principle. So that is a separate legal principle that we can rely on in briefs and argument in asking for and it's self-executing. So regardless of what this statute says, we can still ask for it in the Constitution. But there are also principles of statutory interpretation that, you know, if we kept this phrase, including loss of income, in the statute, it would be the broad overarching concept, and then the guidance on page 1 of the bill being more specific would also help. So that is something to consider. And I thank you for the question.
I would like to pose that question at some point in time to
Department
of Law or court system or whatever.
We'll keep that on the record, Representative Carpenter. Any additional questions? Representative Story.
Thank you, Chair Shaw. Through the chair, would there be any legal fees that they would be responsible for? And I know you have the category and other expenses incurred.
Through the chair, Representative Story, the language in HB 286 is modeled after the federal statute that's currently in existence. And one of the reasons that I asked for that is because we could use decided case law
from federal criminal cases by analogy and argue that those decided opinions should apply in Alaska, and that helps with judicial efficiency and making fair I'm not really answering your question. You said, did you mean could defendants be ordered to pay legal fees for victims?
Through the chair, I just was wondering if there was any. It's like legal fees. It's something that can happen. I was wondering if there was any way a victim would want to be compensated for legal fees. I mean, I know. I'm just wondering, and I know there's a catch-all phrase, but I'm just wondering.
Through the chair, Representative Story, it's my experience that if there's related litigation with a crime victim in civil court, those fees are absorbed through contingency fees or as part of the award in the related civil litigation. Mm-hmm. And Office of Victims' Rights is a free service to all crime victims. It's not a needs-based or income-based.
Mm-hmm. Any additional questions or comments from committee members? Representative Carpenter.
At some point in time, I just want to follow up with the question that I had, whether it's now or later.
Why don't we do it now, since everybody's here?
Department of Law online?
Yeah. Well, we've got them here. Casey Shorter's here for the Department of Law, personally. She can come to the table, put herself on the record, and help us with that question, if you would, please.
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. Through the chair to Representative Carpenter, could you repeat the question, please?
Sure thing. The question through the chair is that on lines 6 through 8 of the bill, I'm sorry, that's page 2, lines 6 through 8, there is discretion granted to the court to take into account a couple things in relation to establishing the amount of restitution. And one talks about a public policy that favors requiring criminals to compensate for damages and injury, and I don't know what public policy means. And then the second one there is financial burden. So take into consideration financial burden placed on the victim. So I'm wanting to know whether those two items that give the court discretion in determining the amount of restitution are things that help with establishing restitution amount, or whether in practice, it actually declines the restitution that the victims are afforded.
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, I think that the legislature added those two subsections to provide more guidance to the court, because it would be wide open without that. So I think that it helps establish what types of things the court can consider, and so I would see that as a positive.
Okay. Is there any way that we would be able to define what public policy is in that statute? What is it referring to? Is it a written down policy, or just this is what our opinion is that is best for our society?
Through the chair, Representative Carpenter, you can try to define public policy, but we see public policy is essentially statute. It is an expression from the legislature. And I think in this particular case, the legislature wanted to be very clear that it is the public policy of the state that criminals should compensate victims for damages from their conduct. I think that is a pretty clear statement. The legislature wanted to be extra clear by including that language.
Okay. Thank you.
Nothing better than having a subject matter expert at the table. Any additional comments or questions from committee members? No. Seeing none. If you'd like, please submit any amendments for HB 286 to my office by 4 p.m. on Thursday, February 15th. Next week, much of our committee room time will be taken up for budget work on finance subcommittees for the Department of Administration. We may schedule committee time to take up and work on bills previously heard, and my office will communicate with members to confirm that. Are there any additional comments from committee members before we adjourn? Seeing none. I'd like one housekeeping item to be made note of on the record, if I could, please. Last session, the House State Affairs Subcommittee on HB 22 and Senate Bill 88 was established. Since then, this committee has received an additional bill dealing with the subject of retirement and benefits outside of just those two bills. Therefore, I am changing the name of the subcommittee to the House State Affairs Subcommittee on Alaska Retirement and Benefits. The membership of the subcommittee is unchanged. It will be Representative Johnson as chair, Representative Carpenter, and Representative Story are members. In addition to HB 22, which has already been referred to the subcommittee, I'm referring SB 88 and House Bill 302 to the subcommittee as well. And with that, with no other business before the committee, we are adjourned at 4:30.